I mean, when I was at school, Keith, I was hopeless at maths. I was only hopeless at maths because I wasn't interested in it, and it's the same with Ray. He hates geology and history, and his main interest is PE, so why does he have to do another subject?
Well, I don't know. Let's go and ask Ray, shall we?
of tears. The walls shake in desperation. It's been a prison for many a year. This house is a house of trouble.
Cuts a hole into the breeze, a prayer that is now. send him away. All he needed correction and a loving home. Oh, but the world wasn't kind when his daddy died. It sent her soul out to the grave.
I'm Sean and this is Cold Citrus number 13, recorded on Sunday the 23rd of October 2005. I can't believe that I've got to show number 13 already, but that's lucky for some and unlucky for others. But lucky for you, because hopefully I'm going to do a lot less chat this time round and just get on with the music, hence starting with three in a row. First up you heard Mark Almond and Sally Timms with This House is a House of Trouble, single from 1987. And one of the many things I like about that is Mark Almond almost saying, "How very dare you?" Next up you heard Safety in Numbers by Vermilion, which is a download track from the Amateurs on Plastic tribute to Team Beat Records from a few years ago. And finally there you heard Death of Ned Polkin by Kalki. That's K-A-L-K-I. And all I've managed to find out about Kalki is that I think they're from somewhere in the Oxford area. And that was a track that I downloaded from the Rob the Bank website on Radio 1 a few months ago. And I'm sure it's not there anymore, but you can have a look and try and find it. Next up, Julian Cope, one of the many influences listed for Misty's Big Adventure. And I certainly think that Gareth's vocal style sounds a lot like Julian's, probably because they're both from the Midlands. But beyond that, they both sound very similar, and I think this track illustrates that quite well. And it's The Bloodier Sizes, taken from the album Fried.
Tell me your plans. So I call up my hounds to come along for a ride. And if you want to swing in trees, refuse to live upon your knees, and you will never need to hide.
Quite ashamed.
brilliant corners there, taken from a John Peel session way back in 1986, and that was I'll Never Be the One to Break Your Heart. Brilliant corners hailed from the Bristol area, and quite a good band. A lot of information about them on the website link that I've given. Before that you heard Bikini Atoll with a track called Eve's Rib, which is another one I pilfered from the South by Southwest 2005 festival site. And before that, The Bloody Assizes by Julian Cope from the album Fried. Next up, really, really good song, which you've probably all heard before, but if you haven't, it's really cool. I think it's really cool, even though it's about sort of 8 years old now. I think it made the Festive 50 in 97, and it's a band called The New Bad Things, and the track's called Suck. After that, a very long mystery track, which is not on the track listing and one that I've just stuck in there because there is some linkage into the New Bad Things track, so see if you can spot the link. And in fact, the track after that has also got some linkage to the second one, so that's actually a sort of theme coming out of these three. Middle track is very long, I warn you, so if you want to go and make some tea, you can, and I'll talk to you in about 15 minutes. Sucks!
Andrew Jeffers had reached his limit. It was now mid-August. Jumenti had been separated from Marcia for more than 2 months. In 2 months, all he had to show were 3 dog-eared letters and 2 very expensive long-distance phone calls. True, when school had ended and she'd returned to Wisconsin, due to Locust, Pennsylvania, she had sworn to maintain a certain fidelity. She would date occasionally, but merely as amusement. She would remain faithful. But lately, Waldo had begun to worry. He'd had trouble sleeping at nights. And when he did, he had horrible dreams. He lay awake at night, tossing and turning underneath his pleated quilt protector, tears welling in his eyes as he pictured Marcia, her sworn vows overcome by liquor and the smooth soothings of some Neanderthal, finally submitting to the final caresses of sexual oblivion. It was more than the human mind could bear. Visions of Marcia's faithlessness haunted him. Daytime fantasies of sexual abandon permeated his thoughts. And the thing was, they wouldn't understand how she really was. He, Waldo, alone understood this. He had intuitively grasped every nook and cranny of her psyche. He'd made her smile. She needed him. He wasn't there. The idea came to him on the Thursday before the mama's parade was scheduled to appear. He just finished mowing and edging the Adelson's lawn for $1.50, and I checked the mailbox to see if there was at least a word from Marcia. There was nothing but a circular from the Amalgamated Women and Company of America inquiring into his own needs. At least they cared enough to write. It was a New York company. You could go anywhere in the mails. Then it struck him. He didn't have enough money to go to Wisconsin in the accepted fashion, true. But why not mail himself? It was absurd, you see. He would ship himself parcel post special delivery. The next day, Waldo went to the supermarket to purchase the necessary equipment. He bought masking tape, a staple gun, and a medium-sized cardboard box just right for a person of his build. He judged that with a minimum of jostling, he could ride quite comfortably. A few air holes, some water, a basket of night snacks, and it would probably be as good as going tourist. By Friday afternoon, Waldo was set. He was thoroughly packed and the post office had agreed to pick him up at 3 o'clock. He'd marked the package fragile, and as he sat curled up inside, resting on a foam rubber cushioning he thoughtfully indicated, he tried to picture the look of awe and happiness on Marcia's face as she opened the door, saw the package, tipped the deliverer, and then opened it to see her Waldo finally there in person. She would kiss him, and then maybe they could see a movie. If he'd only thought of this before. Suddenly, rough hands gripped his package, and he felt himself borne up. He landed with a thud in a truck and was off. Marcia Bronson had just finished setting her hair. It had been a very rough weekend. She had to remember not to drink like that. Bill had been nice about it, though. After it was over, he said he still respected her, and after all, it was certainly the way of nature. And even though, no, he didn't love her, he did feel an affection for her. And after all, they were grown adults. Oh, and Bill could teach Waldo. But that seemed many years ago. Sheila Klein, her very, very best friend, walked in through the porch screen door and into the kitchen. Oh God, it's absolutely modern outside. I know what you mean. I feel all icky. Marcia tightened the belt on her cotton robe with the silk outer edge. Sheila ran her finger over some salt grains on the kitchen table, licked her finger and made a face. I'm supposed to be taking these salt pills, but she won't, who knows. They make me feel like throwing up. Marcia started to pat herself on the chin, an exercise she'd seen on television. God, don't even talk about that. She got up from the table and went to the sink where she picked up a bottle of pink and blue vitamins. Want one? Supposed to be better than steak. And then attempted to touch her knees. I don't think I'll ever touch a daiquiri again. She gave up and sat down, this time near the small table that supported the telephone. Maybe Bill will call, she said to Sheila's glass. Sheila nibbled on the cake. After last night, I thought maybe you'd be through with him. I know what you mean. My God, he was like an octopus, hands all over the place. She gestured, raising her arms upward in defense. The thing is, after a while, you get tired of fighting with him, you know. After all, I didn't really do anything Friday and Saturday, so I kind of owed it to him. You know what I mean? She started to scratch. Sheila was giggling with her hand over her mouth. I tell tell you, I felt the same way. And even after a while, she came forward and whispered, I wanted to crack her. Now she was laughing very loudly. It was at this point that Mr. Jameson of the Clarence Darrow Post Office rang the doorbell of the large sticker-covered frame house. When Marsha Bronson opened the door, he helped her carry the package in. He had his yellow and his green slips of paper signed and left with a 15-cent tip that Marsha had gotten out of her mother's small beige pocketbook in the den. What do you think it is? Sheila asked. Marsha stood with her arms folded behind her back. She stared at the brown cardboard carton and suddenly drew the balloon. I don't know. Inside the package, Waldo quivered with excitement as he listened to the muffled voices. Sheila ran her fingernail over the masking tape that ran down the center of the carton. Why don't you look at the return address and see who it's from? Waldo felt his heart beating. He could feel the vibrating footsteps. It would be soon. Marsha walked around the carton and read the ink-scratched label. Oh, God, it's from Waldo. That schmuck, said Sheila. Waldo trembled with expectation. Well, you might as well open it, said Sheila. Both of them tried to lift the stapled flap. Said Marsha. He must have nailed it shut. They tugged on the flap again. My God, you need a power drill to get this thing open. They pulled again. Can't get a grip. They both stood still, breathing heavily. Why don't you get a scissor, said Sheila. Marsha ran into the kitchen, but all she could find was a little sewing scissor. Then she remembered that her father kept a collection of tools in the basement. She ran downstairs, and when she came back up, she had a large sheet metal cutter in her hand. This is the best I could find, she told her friend. Here, you do it. I'm gonna die. She sank into a large fluffy couch and exhaled noisily. Sheila tried to make a slit between the masking tape and the end of the cardboard flap. The blade was too big and there wasn't enough room. God damn this thing, she said, feeling very exasperated. Then smiling, I got an idea. What, said I. Just watch, said she, touching her finger to her head. Inside the package, Waldo was so transfixed with excitement that he barely breathed. His skin fell quickly from the heat and he could feel his heart beating in his throat. It would be soon. Sheila stood quite upright and walked around to the other side of the package. Then she sank down to her knees, grasped the cutter by both handles, took a deep breath, and plunged the long blade through the middle of the package, through the masking tape, through the cardboard, through the cushioning, and right through the center of Waldo Jeffers' head, which split slightly and caused little rhythmic arcs of red to pulsate gently in the morning sun.
I keep rolling.
hopefully you spotted the obvious connection there, being of course the Velvet Underground. A virtual copy of Phil Collins' greatest hits to you if you got that, and a virtual copy of his entire back catalogue if you didn't. First up you heard New Bad Things with Suck, and one of the bands they mentioned in that is the Velvet Underground. Specifically they mentioned John Cale, and even more specifically the fact that he's Welsh, and I thought the best way of demonstrating that was to play The Gift from White Light, White Heat, which is his sort of monologue narration detailing the demise of Waldo Jeffers. And I heard Jonathan Ross talking about this, or talking about John Cale the other day, and he didn't realise that he was in fact Welsh. So there's your conclusive proof. After that you heard a cover of the Velvet Underground's Run by Spiritualized. Next up, a track that I heard on Zane Lowe the other day on Radio 1, and it's The Rakes and their new single called 22 Grand Job. You can actually go to their website and watch the video for this. And it's them basically strutting around in an office with lots of pouting ladies in the background, which is not a bad thing. And it looks like it was directed by the same person who did Addicted to Love by Robert Palmer. But anyway, here it is, new single, Rakes, 22 Grand Job.
22 grand job, in the city's alright. 22 grand job, in the city's alright. 22 grand job, in the city, that sounds nice. It's alright, it's alright. In the city's alright. 22 grand job, in the city's alright. 22 grand job, in the city's alright. 22 grand job, in the city, that sounds nice. It's alright, it's alright. In the city's alright. The government wire looks alright, but the lights are too bright. Broken sails, ups are two. What am I supposed to do? Earning 28, and I'm on 22. It's alright, it's alright. In the city, it's alright. 22 grand job. In the city, it's alright. 22 grand job. In the city, it's alright. 22 grand job. In the city, that's how it lies. It's alright, it's alright. In the city, it's alright.
At Old Street Thursday night.
In the city, that sounds nice.
Talking shop with my colleagues.
Did we do the same degree?
You said less to me all week.
Got to go, I'm in early. That's alright, that's alright.
22 grand job. In the city's alright. 22 grand job. In the city's alright. 22 grand job.
In the city, that sounds nice. It's alright, it's alright. In the city's alright. 22 grand job. 22 grand job. 22 grand job. 22 grand job. In the city that sounds nice.
Excuse me, Ray. Candice Marie was wondering why, when you're doing one subject that you're happy with, why you have to do another one that you don't want to do at all.
Well, apart from being a requirement of the college.
Oh, that's a requirement of the college, Candice Marie. There we are. Perhaps you'd like to sit here and talk to Ray about it, would you? Or would you like to come across to our tent and sit down and talk to Candice Marie?
Oh, no! It's one!
A bit of a fix. You've blown your own trumpet since 1966. You got some good players, but you've not got the right mix. You're brutal and you rely on those Beckham free kicks. But there's just one thing that's really, really, really annoying me about the England team, you see. Yes, the England team is really shit, but my gosh, you don't seem to know it.
I'm not trying to upset you, even though I would like to. England, they're really shit. You're shit, but my gosh, you don't know it.
So when I see Wayne Rooney and Ashley Cole, I'm hoping someone will go over and give them a kick up the hole. Laughing when the ref takes out his big red card and sends off Saul Campbell and that Steven Gerrard. You still think you're brilliant, but I wish you would get real. You've got that waster Heskey Emil. And then when you lose, you go and act like you won, because all of your fans are hooligans. Yeah.
I'm not trying to upset you, even though I would like to. England are really shit. You're shit, but my gosh, you don't know it.
Leave it out, leave it out. You're all shite. There's Beckham, he's got his head shaved, looks like a girl. Owen, I didn't even know he was playing. Leave it out, get off. Don't set fire to that house. Lisbon gets trashed by all of your fans because you lost your lead to Zinedine Zidane. And your goalie's real brutal, he's Calamity James. Sven's a tool if he plays him all the games. You would be better with that donkey from Shrek. James is so blind he should have gone to Spec Sabres. You should go to Blackpool, cause a big fuss. It's the only chance you'll have of going in an open top bus, yeah.
I'm not trying to upset you, even though I would like to. Ingerland are really shit, your shit, but my gosh, you don't know it. I'm not trying to upset you, even though I would like to. Ingerland are really shit, your shit, but my gosh, you don't know it.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. That was my celebration of England's qualification to the World Cup next year. And that was obviously recorded around the time of Euro 2004. But I'm sure we can expect a rash of similar offerings by the time we get to Germany next year. That was Your Ship, But You Don't Know It by somebody who goes by the name of Engeland. And obviously it was based on the very similar track by The Streets. And before that you heard 22 Grand Job by The Rakes, their new single. Anyway, almost at the end of tonight's show. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you like the mystery track. I figured that as the track was called The Gift, it should be a surprise, and hey, every gift should be a surprise. So I might put a few more things in like that in future shows. Anyway, I'll stop rambling. This has been Cold Citrus number 13, recorded on Sunday the 23rd of October 2005. It's available from coldcitrus.com and also via the wonders of the interweb from peteashton.com/radio, part of his excellent Bonfire Radio network. I'm going to finish with a track by Alex K. Redfern and the Eyesores, and this is called Shopping Cart. Thanks very much for listening. See you next time.
Some